Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing climate change and its impact on conflict and development in Africa. I'm joined by a very special guest, Mr. Dewole Lawal. Dewole is a senior manager and environmental social and governance professional with more than a decade experience supporting clients in various environmental and social governance issues, including the environment ESG strategy, decarbonization, climate change financing, green financing, climate risk management, and a host of other stuff. And Dewole has also worked many years at KPMG doing all of this, but currently works as a manager at Mazda. Dewole, I'm very, very happy to have you join me today, and I look forward to our conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Michael. It's nice to be here.
Brilliant. So let's start off with this. So oftentimes we talk about climate change, and we just take it for granted what climate change is. What exactly is climate change, and what is the scope of it? I know it's a global issue, but what is the scope in Africa?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. You know, when we talk about climate change, we're talking about the changing weather pattern, changing occurrence in terms of temperature, in terms of weather, in terms of rainfall, in terms of what we experience from our cloud system. We talk about issues about today. We see a lot of rainfall in some places when we are expecting rainfall. We do not see rainfall in those situations. Those are part of the issue about climate change is real. That's how we say climate change is real, because we see that the changing weather pattern, sea level rise, high level of temperature, heat waves. So those are the things that we can know that the climate change is real, that we are seeing the effect of climate change around us, and that shows that climate change is real. So in Nigeria or in Africa, we see that the issue about droughts, flooding in some places, in some areas that we expect rainfall, the rainfall will not come at this particular time. So that is a changing weather pattern. So that's part of what we call about climate change. The weather is changing, the climate is changing. So no longer the way it used to be before. Like in the UK, I think the summer came on earlier than expected, because people normally, the expectation was that it would come by June, but by May, already experiencing summer. So that's part of what we call the effect of climate change. Is actually real everywhere. It's not only Africa, it's globally. We see that effects. Some places we see that issue about cyclone in the US, all those flooding, all those the changing heat waves, the patterns of weather. So that's part of why we know that everywhere. You don't need to be told again that climate change is real. You can also see it, that it is real.
Mm-hmm. There's been you know, several global efforts. So, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the global impact, that no region or continent is left out in terms of the effect of this. But before we come to the responses, one thing in the literature is the connection between climate change and conflict. It's not very clear. So in Nigeria, for instance, you look at the Fulani Herder, the Herder Farmer conflict. You go to the Horn of Africa, in East Africa, Kenya, Somalia, you see all of that as well. So, well, what is the relationship between climate change and conflict? Yeah. Do you think there's a substantial connection?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. There's actually a big connection between climate change and conflict, especially looking at Nigeria or West Africa or Sub-Saharan Africa. You look at the case of Nigeria. In the past, we see that there's some areas they do have, for instance, the herders, they do have access. You see that a lot of rainfall, and those their cattle, they rely on grasses for survival. As a result of lack of grasses in some areas, they need to move to other areas in search of a greener, other pasture for their cattle. So as such, they need to encroach other areas. And the situation even in the southwest, where they move from the north because of the drought, move to the southern part of southwestern part of Nigeria in order to for the grazing of their cattle. As a result of that, they are encroaching on the farmer's land space. Due to that, there will be some conflict because they spend a lot of money in actually trying to like plant some crops with the expectation that they will be able to actually harvest them certain period of time. But that will not happen because the herders would have already invaded their farmland. And as a result of that, there was a kind of warning for the farmers on the herders to stop encroaching on their farmland. So due to the cattle need the grasses for survival. They need those spaces for survival. As such, they are not yielding to that. That actually led to conflict. We've seen a lot of cases in southwestern part of Nigeria between the farmers and the herders that are fighting over the land space. So that has been a very serious issue in Nigeria and also other part of Africa, like Chad, for instance. So this is a serious issue about conflict in Nigeria. And that's also effect climate change.
And I think, again, if I follow up on that will also have some impact on food, because if the farmers are not able to go to the farm or harvest their stuff, basically there won't be nothing to harvest, and that definitely impacts on food. What are the responses so far? Because now we can see that if you look at our header farmer conflict, so on one hand, the farmers argue they have a right to their land and a right to provide food or you know, harvest their crops or plant their crops. On the other hand, you look at the herders as well, they have to graze. We need meat as well. We need milk as well. So how do you resolve this dilemma? It looks like it's a dilemma. What has been the responses so far in resolving this climate-induced conflict?
Yeah, thank you for that. For instance, the issue of Nigeria, there's been a lot of response from the government, especially the people from the House of Representatives and our people too. Also, experts have suggested that the need for a kind of close grazing, where whatever those cattle need will be provided for them, will be sorted for them, instead of open grazing where they move around. And as a result of that, they cause a problem to the farmers. And they also affect our food security, availability of food for our people, because when the farmers are not able to farm, that affects access to food, because they are not, it affects also the cost of food in the market too. So that's a big, but what were the solutions that have been, even at the level of the Senate and National Assembly, they've passed a law, but that has not been assented to by the president, the former president, President Muhammadu Buhari. That was not assented to. People, because a lot of people were against it, because there are powerful people behind it that felt that they enjoy the open grazing system, because they look at the cost implications of that, having the closed grazing where they need to sort for the grasses or whatever food that those cattle will need. But by open grazing, they felt it's very cheap for them to just move them around, instead of having a closed grazing system where they need to have a dedicated farmland, dedicated land for the closed grazing, and they also need to buy those food that they need. But in a situation, that's why a lot of vegetations that they feel that it is going to be more expensive for them to cater for. So that's been the we need, what we need now is that kind of political will from the government to enforce the law, because there's a lot of people are actually they are reacting against the law. They do not want to comply with the law, resistance to the law, because they felt it would be more expensive to do. And besides, they are used to the traditional way of open grazing, but which is affecting the farmers. So it's a serious challenge. But the best approach would still be, in my opinion, would still be that to think about closed grazing.
So talk about this closed grazing. I know in the Nigerian case, even from the 60s or 70s, there used to be like some grazing laws where you had grazing pathways for the herders to pass. And some of the argument is that these grazing pathways have been, many of them have been closed, many of them are not effective. You know, some buildings have been, houses or whatever have been constructed on those grazing land. Because, and then again, we've seen where that creates some sort of social tensions, you know, whilst these people migrate from one place to another. So you mentioned two things. You've mentioned political and you mentioned the laws. What law are you talking about here?
There was actually a member of the House of Representative in Nigeria that actually introduced a bill that doesn't become a law anyway, because it wasn't assented to. Even by the majority, by the Senate, they did not actually approve that particular bill for it to become a law. That law is about closed grazing, that we have labeled that people who have their cattle, they should have a closed grazing system where they can take care of their cattle and whatever food they need, they will be in a kind of a space, and then they will cater for them in that space, as opposed to them moving around. You know, what you talk about that grazing pathway, that's another suggestion some people made, but it seems that it is not a bit realistic today. Where they need to, as they move around too, in the course of moving, they may see a farmland, the cattle will move to the farmland and constitute nuisance to those farmland. Maybe the best approach is also to think about that actually the closed grazing. And also maybe they can have, maybe their closed grazing can be a kind of a forest reserve area where that land will be dedicated mainly for rearing of animals or cattle, as opposed to just, and they will have that area, they will not be able to move beyond certain area that they have been allocated to. So that's another solution that we may think of, as opposed to the closed grazing can be in different dimension. There can be a large expanse of land just for rearing, and they are limited to this area. And as they spray, as they take part of certain part of the grasses, they also plant other grasses so that they can also have other things to feed on. So we can assume that the land should be large enough for the animals to move around. So that
I've argued. Okay, go on.
Okay. So actually,
go on.
Okay, I'm done.
I've argued somewhere where if I come back to also this linkage between conflict, why there seems to be a clear linkage. You know, I think we agree on that. We also agree that solution. From my understanding of what you're saying, which also kind of reflects on or illustrates what I've been talking about over the years, is that even when we can see linkages, the responses we've mentioned are not necessarily scientific responses. There seems to be responses that are that has to do, there could be social response, it could be political response. So in that aspect, I wanted to ask you, how do you think this can be mitigated or adapted? Because a lot of people have talked about, when they look at climate change, again, they've looked at in the literature that it's not necessarily human induced. Some people say it's one that is human induced. So if it's human induced, that means it also can be corrected by a change in attitude. I don't know if you agree on that and if you can expand
Yeah, thank you so much. I actually agree. You know, if you look at climate change, the effect of climate change that we're experiencing is as a result of our action. That's why when we talk about sustainable development goal, we say that development that meets the need of the present without compromising the need of future generation to meet their own needs. Meaning that if you are thinking of any development, anything we have to do today, we have to think about one generation, our action, how it affects others. So this issue, one thing about climate change is that whatever you give to nature, nature will bring it back to you. If you reduce the emission, you take to the cloud, the cloud will be clearer and better, and it will give you something better. So that's a lot of effect of climate that we experience as a result of our action. The issue about sea level rise is as a result of a lot of emissions, a lot of plastic waste inside the water bodies. All this, that is polluting the water, but those things have implications on the water bodies. They don't come back to us. So we experience whatever we give to the nature. That's why we said, for us to mitigate the effect of climate change, we need to think about how can we reduce our emission? How can we ensure that we reduce pollution in the environment? How can we do what is right, doing the right thing in terms of take care of the environment, protect the environment, do no harm to the environment, protect people. You know, that is of course, the climate, ESG, sustainability talk about 3 P's, people, planet, and profit, and make profit in a responsible way. So you think about people, you think about the environment. So our action has a lot of implications on the environment. So talking about the issue of the conflict and everything is more of all those things is still about changing in attitudinal behavior or the way we see the environment. Because all this flooding, all this drought, as a result of our action, you know, as those herders, as they take certain, are they actually planting? You know, it's not just about taking from the environment without giving back. They always find a pasture that is okay for grazing. After taking from that, they do not plant back. They move to other areas. So that actually has implications on climate change. Why not think of planting back? That's why we are not saying that close grazing, even if you have large spans of land, as you take from it, you plant back so that you can have one to fall back on. Part of what we talk about mitigating climate change effect is tree planting. Because tree planting can absorb a lot of carbon and also help us to make the air quality. That's the essence of why we say we always emphasize about tree planting, about carbon credit, carbon offset through tree planting, because of the advantage, the opportunity, and the benefit from it. So our action can go a long way to reduce the effect of climate change, also to reduce any form of conflict. Because climate change and conflict is about not doing the right thing between the herders and the farmers. The herders fail to plant back. They now rely on moving around. And in the course of moving around, they invade on the farmland and cause a problem to the crops, which leads to fighting and conflict. So if they can change their action by planting back, when the cattle take a part of it, they plant back. So everybody is a collective effort. We must look at our actions, how it affects the environment, and ensure that we are not just taking from the environment, we're also giving back to the environment.
We've seen also, not just the farmer herder, in Nigeria, for instance, we've seen in the Niger Delta, we've seen over the years before we started experiencing, the Boko Haram insurgency. We've seen where we had the Niger Delta insurgents, where, through the actions of the oil companies over the years, gas spillage, emission of that. We've seen how the farmlands in the Niger Delta have been polluted. The rivers have been polluted, and these people can not farm or fish. And of course, over the years, they experienced that insurgency. But what I wanted to ask you is, what sort of clients do you deal with, and how are these private clients, are these governments? When you say you deal with clients in this, and how do you teach them to be more climate aware, or to who are your clients? What is the scope of the?
I don't think about my organization.
Yes,
and all the Maza, but I'll just speak for my organization as a consultant. So I'll be speaking based on my experience, but I will not be focusing more on any of the places I've worked or where I currently work. Any client specifically, but I will just say that what I see about the issue about Niger Delta, especially with the oil and gas, how the oil spillage affects the water bodies, which eventually affect fishermen fishing for the people who depend on the fishing for their source of livelihood, the fishermen and women. So that actually is also another effect. And at the end of the day, we see a lot of agitations, not tension to the environmental issues. That's why part of the requirement is mandatory for oil and gas company to have in place oil spill contingency plan. You know that that oil spill contingency plan will show that how they want to mitigate oil spill, if the oil spill occur, how they want to clean, how they even have, the first thing is to avoid it. You must avoid it, whatever it means, so that it does not even get to, that's part of the oil spill contingency. The detailed part of it is to ensure that whatever spillage, you do not ensure that doesn't get to the water bodies. You have something to clean it as soon as possible before going to water body. That is the very essence of it. If you must go to it, you know that you are going to spend a lot of money. That means you must avoid it because you'll be responsible for the cleaning of the water bodies if it should get there. But you know, because there was no oil spill in the past, contingency plan in the past, there's been a lot of environmental degradation. If you go to Niger Delta, or where we have oil producing companies there, they really mess up with the environment. It's also part of the lack of will from the government to not enforcing the right policy and ensuring compliance. Not that the policy are not there, but the issues are about compliance, showing compliance to the policies. So, but I think it's getting better now. Hopefully government will also pay more attention to this.
But people talk about climate financing. So in the recent so they had the first African climate summit. It was in Kenya last year, and then they had the climate conference in Dubai, and then we saw pledges to Africa, and then they said, you know, that there's need of financing for this. And I think every nation has this responsibility where they provide every 5 years to see that climate change commitment or that. How far does financing goes into mitigating? Does it play a huge role?
Actually, the climate finance plays a very critical role in ensuring that we mitigate the effect of climate change. You know, we see a lot of DFIs now. They're trying to see how we can make our world a better place, our planet a better place. So they have certain finance, but to attract those finance, you must show that you that commitment on the part of the companies or the organization. Even for countries now, there are also some specific finance to certain countries if they show that commitment. That's why the Nigerian government is committed to attracting climate finance. That is why they agreed to have a regulation on the IFRS S1 and S2 of the International Sustainability Standard Board. And also the Nigerian government has passed this regardless of whether you are small scale or big enterprise, you are expected to report on your sustainability journey, have in place sustainability policy, you have in place management, environmental and social management system to be able to manage your environmental and social issues. So that's part of the commitment is for them to attract climate finance, to attract support from the global body, because a lot of some DFIs, development finance institutions, and also some of our multilateral institutions have committed certain money to that. And countries or companies that want to attract that kind of investment, they must show commitment to doing the right thing so that they can attract that kind of finance, the climate finance that will support them in mitigating the effect of climate change.
I agree with you. Although I can argue that sometimes when, especially in Africa, like when we look at those kind of like aid or climate finance, like we call it climate aid, it could be a motivation, whereas rather than, it could be the driving force rather than the need to address this issue. So you could have an unintended consequence of not letting the governments, or let's say countries, for instance, in Africa, to actually deal with these issues, because they did all of this just to attract those funds. But again, if, now that I'm talking to you, I'm looking at that, irrespective, it's still, we've had so many policies in Africa. I pick Nigeria, for instance. So you look at the gas, you look at reporting in terms of like, is the, what's that one doing, or passenger, where they did petroleum, extractive industry stuff. You talk about needs. All of our policies seems to be motivated by external promise or external promise of aid or finance. It needs to be, it's externally driven. Do you think that is necessarily a good thing? Do you think that in a way allows, do you think it has a negative effect on political will to address these issues?
Yeah, actually it has, because it's always better for a country, government, to be forward thinking rather than expecting or waiting for the guidance or waiting for the developed country to tell them what to do. So it's also better for government to be proactive rather than reactive, or creating policy because you want to rehearse certain things that you require. That's part of what, if we must move forward at a faster pace, we need to be proactive rather than reactive and look at what do we really need as a country in terms of policy, not waiting for one global policy and try to domesticate it here in Nigeria. So the best thing to do is always to be proactive. It's always been a challenge here, because it seems that the work of governance has been reduced to just waiting for the global north to decide what we do in the global south and tell us this is the right thing to do. And before we now think of domestic, we know that they've gone a long way. Anyway, we can learn from them, but it's not, we have to wait all the time for what they are doing before we start doing something. We can always reflect inward and see what do we need, and then think about it and move ahead. That is the best thing to do if we must really move, and if we must be able to be a better nation. So we do not need to wait for those policies, but it's always in the case here in Africa, entirely, that we do wait for the West, whatever the policy or trends that is going on, before we decide on what to do. Even the IFRSS 1 and S2 is also something that is from the global body, National Sustainability Standard Board. So can't we even have our home before that? Though we know that is coming up, we try to have our climate change act anyway, but we've still not been able to appropriately implement it. So, but the way the pace that we are moving with IFRSS 1 and S2 is actually faster than the one we created on our own. So we are not really focused on our own local policy. We are more interested in the global policy that we have to domesticate here in Nigeria. So that's
I agree with you, because I've even in my book, you look at most of the, and I think it's not only for Nigeria, look at most of the policies that are very laudable, especially in the Fourth Republic, since Nigeria turned to democracy, has always been one that is externally motivated. But I was going to look at, in terms of peace building, so we see definitely that this is causing instability, social instability among different communities. So you see, because one of the articles I wrote, I was looking at the Fulani, let's go back to the Fulani herders as well again. And sometimes we might have the Fulani militias. And it's not just in Nigeria. This issue is across Africa, where you have these nomads, you know, even in Uganda, in you know, East Africa, you see this issue as well. And you see again in Burkina Faso, in all of this Sahel, you know, all of this manifest. So it's across Africa. So you see where these nomads or Fulani herders move across. But in Nigeria, for instance, where we, like every other places, where we have different communities. So moving to towards the south. So we've seen in Ekiti, for instance, I know of Ekiti, I know of Benue, where the governors had like a ban against open grazing, which which we were talking about before. You go to the southeast where, you know, IPOB and the rest are like, no, you can't do this. So how do we create an awareness, even away from the government now? How do we create a climate change awareness? How can that be integrated into peace building and community cohesion, social stability, kind of like, you know, to people to be aware that this, you know, this things exist, and how can we cohabit? How can we solve this issue without necessarily adversely impacting on social cohesion and you know, clashing communities, clashing?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I think what we need in terms of looking at what we need to do to ensure social cohesion and also ensure peace building is to, for us to see that, let people know that if you take anything from the environment, you need to give back. So that will also reduce the movement of the herders from one place to the other. So by as they know that their cattle rely on the grasses and some other things that they need for survival. If you take away from it, if they take it, you also need to be part of the planting. You are not necessarily just taking away and not also giving back. So that's another thing to think about. Again, we also need to understand that people, there should also be opportunity for people to move from one place to the other. They should be given some kind of pathways that they can pass. They should not go beyond those pathways if they must move from one locality to the other, and they must abide by it. That will ensure social cohesion, as opposed to passing through farmland when they are moving from one place to the other, if they must move. So that they also need to. One thing about ensuring that we do the right thing in terms of promoting peace building is to care about others too, not just about ourselves. Just focusing on yourself, about your own happiness, and not looking at the others. We need to show what we call, we need to show empathy to others, care about other people, not just about what is easy for you to do. It's about ensuring that we care about others. We do not just focus on ourselves. By that, we'll be able to ensure social cohesion and ensure peace building. If you must move around, move in a way that you will not coach on other people's farmland, where you are going to maybe a land that is not farmland but is available for grazing. But I think, I see, in my opinion, the issue of open grazing should be minimized to the barest minimum. You should focus on close grazing. If you must do open grazing, you pass through some pathway and you focus on the areas. You must have identified an area that will not affect others, and you move there. And it should be a space that has been acquired for grazing, not just moving around and be grazing. So that will help us also reduce the conflict from the issue of climate change. So because we know climate change is, everybody has to plan back, not just taking it from the environment. That is what this time requires of us.
It is quite obvious. So I'll come to the last question. Well, it's quite obvious that climate change itself has implications beyond it has both direct and indirect consequences. So the direct consequence is going to be the flooding, you know, but then again, it has other implications that we've been talking about. You know, when flooding comes, people have to leave their house. So there's forced migration. People have to migrate to the places, and then when they migrate to other places, there's pressure on resources, and then there's tension, there's clash with people in those places over resources, and then there's migration, you know, and all of these kind of issues. There's, you know, it could lead to transmission of diseases and all of that. And then again, we've seen where it could also affect livelihood. All of these are things that we've been discussing. But if you look at it as a final thought, and look at how, for instance, I know you've started talking about it in this last statement, but how, if you look at the final thought, how should we, or how can we, as a continent, as a country, for instance, Nigeria, first of all, and as a continent, how can we deal with these issues, with this climate change issue? How can we mitigate the conflict that I know you've touched upon it, but if you can just expand as a final thought on it.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I think what we need to do is to look at, okay, let's say we experience flooding. We must think of how do we help people who are affected by flooding. At the same time, too, how can we ensure that going forward, we are able to mitigate that flooding. When it happens, we need to look at the short-term kind of attention to those people affected, so that they can also return back, if possible, as soon as possible, to where they come from. Because as part of development, we do not just need to leave abandon a particular area and leave it because flooding has occurred. See how we can attend to it, but in the short term, how they can be assisted to be able to cope. And then going forward, thinking of what cause actually led to the flooding and whatever the problem of causing. That's why you see in Lagos State, the government is trying to look at a lot of demolition is occurring in Lagos State. And part of the causes is because it's sort of the people building on a site that are basically drainage area or close to water, but that the government has already earmarked for free flow of water. For people that are not aware of the plan, you just see someone saying, I have a land and this is very cheap. You went there and buy the land. And then later on, the government comes and say, this you are actually on the pathway for more free flow of water during when it's raining. So they're trying their demolition. So that is also part of it. People need to understand what they need to do. Government, it's part of the action point from the government. The issue of flooding is that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of demolition going on in Lagos State. Because the current government is actually determined about reducing the effect of flooding. And you know, of course, I was fortunate to attend one leadership summit where the governor was there to talk about the issue of climate change. That they said part of what they are doing is to see that they try to do whatever action they need to do. They need to be bold and courageous to do that. So people also need to also look at the implications of whatever action, if you want to buy land, is it the right place to buy? Also, are you not encroaching or anything? Get your accurate CFO and get the right confirmation before building. That will minimize any form of a future loss. So that is very, very important. So part of the action is for we as human beings to think about our actions affect the environment and whatever. We should not just be taking from the environment, we should also be giving back. Thinking of tree planting, thinking of reducing our emission, thinking of renewable energy, you know, all those things. Look at our actions, how it affects the environment. So, and do no harm to the environment. Do not just pollute the environment. Don't just drop your waste anywhere. So, no matter how little, look at your action. Do not drop your bottled water. Use bottled water anywhere. So, all those little things, that's implication on the environment, because later it may affect the drainage system, the free flow of water when it rains. So it's a collective effort that everyone must think about. And we need to live peacefully with our people from different communities, also people from our communities. Live peacefully and care about others, not just about ourselves. It's about ensuring that we show empathy to others, we care about others, and we want everyone to also benefit from the environment, not just us. So I think that would be my parting words.
Oh, thank you, Adewale. Now that you're talking about, I think what I'm gathering, it has to be a whole society approach to it. So it has to be one where there has to be, like, sometimes I'm thinking of like climate education, you know, where people are aware of because there's a lot of people that are in denial. Even in developed worlds, even in America, I see some of the Republican parties, even forerunners, denying, actually climate change. So it has to be one where there's proper education and people, like Riley said, play their part in the government, the people as well. Well, we do hope there's going to be a very substantial change in attitude and also in the way we... Because it's our your house. They say how you lay your bed is how you lie on it. But now it's not just you. we have to start thinking about the future generations and, you know, keep a safe place, safe environments for them as well. Well, I'm very, very grateful for having you on our invitation. And we thank you for your insights into this very, very critical subject. And I'll keep you posted once the episode is ready to air. And we would employ you to help share among your network. And hopefully we'll be able to do our part and take heed to your advice.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, Father, have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much. It's nice talking to you.
You're welcome. Yes, same here.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in today to today's episode on climate change and its impact on conflict and development in Nigeria and Africa. Join me in thanking Maduwale Lawal for offering his insights into this very special and critical subject. I implore you to join us again next week for another inspiring and insightful episode. For now, stay blessed and I'll see you.